welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C. Sierra Leoneans vote today to choose a new president, parliament, mayors, and local representatives.
We have this list that of the arrival of voting materials and the start of the voting process. We should be starting at 7 o'clock. There are stations that have still not started.
A Nigerian group petitions the International Criminal Court to investigate what he says are the ongoing human rights violations.
We have to articulate the whole thing and drag the identified perpetrators, especially the state actor perpetrators, including the top officials of the government of Imo State, to the ICC. So that is correct.
And the main opposition in the Democratic Republic of Congo calls for the compilation of a new voter list for the coming December elections.
You have so many fake names over there. This guy of the Electoral Commission, they have given to people at home some machines to fabricate cards.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Sierra Leoneans are voting today to choose a new president, parliament, mayors, and local representatives. In the presidential contest, incumbent President Julius Maada Bio from the governing Sierra Leone People's Party, or SLPP, faces a stiff challenge from Samora Kamara from the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC. In the mayoral contest, incumbent Yvonne Akisoya from the main opposition APC also faces tough competition from Mohamed Gento Kamara, a prominent businessman from the ruling SLPP. For the latest developments regarding how voting is proceeding, I reach Abdul Fatoma. He is the executive director for the Campaign for Human Rights and Development International. The organization is also part of the Election Conflict Prevention Working Group.
My voting process went on smoothly, but however, the center that I've just voted, they didn't start earlier on time due to logistical constraints. But now I talked to the polling center staffs. They said that they're thinking about exhausting their list. But however, voting is going on smoothly now at that end. However, I've visited other centers. There are huge tensions where citizens are actually monitoring the voting process by themselves using their mobile phones. So they haven't...
What is causing the tension? What is causing the tension?
The tension is that the police officers that are deployed at these centers don't actually want citizens to use their mobile phones to video the centers, or the election process. So they're asking those citizens, if they don't have media accreditation, they don't have no rights to actually switch on their phone cameras.
But has that been the usual practice? If they are not infringing on the privacy of those who are voting, why are the police restricting them?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that it's not only the police that are having concern also. Some people in the queue also have concern that they don't want to be videoed, by others. And so that creates the tensions. And some are in favor of it and some are against it. And so for the police actually to calm down tensions, I think that is the reason why, they're asking these people actually to stop during the video recording by their mobile phones.
So has the situation calmed down so far?
Yes, it has calmed down, and the tension is now down. And I'm currently at the west end of Freetown. That's the Godrich community at the Lady Patricia Kaba Memorial School, center.
All right, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you again.
All right, Peter.
Thank you. Abdul Fatoma is the executive director for the Campaign for Human Rights and Development International. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. Meanwhile, the presidential candidate of the main opposition All People's Congress is expressing concern about the late arrival of voting materials in some parts of the country. Samora Kamara, the former foreign minister, says he has concerns about security since the lateness will force the Electoral Commission to extend the period of voting into the night. In an interview with me shortly after voting, Kamara expressed confidence that the people of Sierra Leone will choose him as their next president.
Where did this list start? Of the arrival of voting materials and the start of the voting process, we should be starting at 7 o'clock. There are stations that have still not started. On average, we've have something like 1.5 to 2 hours delay. Now, yes, you will have late start, but this one is what is happening now is unprecedented.
This is in it's Freetown. Like are you talking about Freetown or other parts of the country?
It's all over the country because we are getting real-time reports from all over the country. We have a situation room where we're getting all of these reports. What's happening is unprecedented, giving us the conclusion that, as we have always said, our suspicion of the Chief Electoral Commissioner and the Commission itself of bias is now being heightened more and more, and it's been evidenced by these deliberate practical activities that are taking place.
If I may ask you, what do you think your chances are in this election as a presidential candidate?
You know, it is not for me as a presidential candidate. It is for Sierra Leone. We are doing this for the people of Sierra Leone. If you do not allow free and fair elections, then you are disappointing the people of Sierra Leone that is enfranchising all of Sierra Leoneans, and that is not good. You cannot be a rogue leader in the end. Yes, I can say I have the numbers. I have the numbers. The APC has the numbers. Nobody, they all know, even the SFP know that. SFP, they do know that the APC has the numbers. And this is that scare. It is that the worry that if we all come out, if there is free and fair elections, the APC will win outright.
But Dr. Kamara, a late start to the election, doesn't it affect every voter, not necessarily one particular voter or one particular supporter against the other?
Well, it does. I mean, again, when you want to regionalize the access to voting, it becomes very, very troublesome. For instance, some parts of the Southeast where our agents are not allowed, we are not allowed to enter. And we have made these complaints to elections observers in Sierra Leone repeatedly, in Pujahu, in Bond. And I mean, you cannot disenfranchise voters of the opposition party in 7 out of 16 districts in Sierra Leone just because you want to win. And at the end of the day, what do you want to win? You want to win for yourself or you want to win for the people?
What is your message to the people of Sierra Leone as they vote and choose new leaders to lead them?
Well, first of all, those who are standing on the queues to vote, I will ask them to be patient. I know if there is any delay, this year has no choice but to extend the voting time. The only fear I have is that the voting time is to stop at 5, 7 to 5. Now, when you extend it to the night, you don't know what would happen at night. Security risks will just increase. So I will just admonish ECSL staff to make sure that they really fast track the process and make sure they provide time compensation. And then they should encourage everybody who is eligible to vote. They're not working for individual politicians. You're working for the state, you're working for the country. And the most critical problem I have is with the Chief Electoral Commissioner, and I want to admonish him to understand that he is a professional. He is not an elections expert. So as a professional, when you're appointed in this position, you should really spend your time and learn the job and then make sure that you do not mortgage your professionalism.
Samora Kamara is the presidential candidate of the main opposition All People's Congress, or APC. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. Nigerian group has petitioned the International Criminal Court, or ICC, to investigate what it says are the ongoing human rights violations, insecurity, and targeted killings in Imo State. In its petition, the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety, says those responsible must be held accountable and made to face the full force of the law. The Hague-based court has officially recognized the petition. In InterSociety's criminal complaint, it alleges crimes against humanity, including torture, kidnappings, mass and targeted killings in Imo State. It argues that Nigeria is a state party to the Rome Statute and the court should prosecute those responsible for the alleged crimes. Critics say the call for the ICC investigation is an affront to Nigeria's judiciary. But Emeka Omiagbalasi, leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety, tells me that the ICC must act to ensure victims of the crimes receive justice.
We have to do that following the launching of our report on Imo. Recall that we did a fairly months period of a detailed investigation on Imo, where we discovered a lot of atrocities going on, killing of people, burning of people's houses, and so on and so forth. We were able to identify the perpetrators, both the state actors and non-state actors. So after launching the report, it's just a follow-up to that report, because it's not about launching report, it's about what measures next. So in order to answer that question, what measures next, we have to articulate the whole thing and drag the identified perpetrators, especially the state actor perpetrators, including the top officials of the government of Imo State, to the ICC. So that is correct.
But what do you want the ICC to do, to investigate and prosecute the perpetrators? Is that the reason for this petition?
Yeah. Well, you know, you carry out investigation. It is the outcome of your investigation that we determine which crime has been committed and who committed it, and who was the victim, and so on and so forth, and whether the authorities in Nigeria have taken any steps remedying the situation by fishing out the perpetrators, having them punished, having the victims identified and compensated. So after looking at the whole thing, we found out that the officials of Nigerian government of Nigeria have exhibited the inability and unwillingness to look into the matter, which automatically conveys jurisdiction on the ICC. So that is why we have to petition the ICC after having discovered that Nigerian government have refused to do, to act.
What do you say to those who are of the opinion that by going straight to the ICC, you are undermining Nigeria's sovereignty, and they are saying you could possibly have gone to the ECOWAS court, which could address your concern? Your response?
No, it's not true. You know, if people are saying so, then those people must be ignorant of the law, the international law, the local law, the ECOWAS, and what have you. There is no criminal court established by ECOWAS, and we are not aware of their aim by the African Union. So we are talking about criminal court. It's like somebody referring to ICC or comparing ICC to International Court of Justice. They are two different things.
Some of your critics are saying that the ICC would only pick issues up when the local court or the judicial system is incapable of handling it. And they're saying that Nigeria's judicial system has demonstrated independence and capable and well equipped to handle your concerns. So why approach the ICC, they say?
That is not the position of the law, sir. That is not the position of the local law and international norms. The law is not the position of the law and international norms. I'm not talking about a situation where a state party sleeps, is sleeping, is unwilling and unable to act while you watch the killings and destructions to continue. No, that is not the position of the law. The law says where there is sufficiency of evidence that the local authorities have used their investigative, their judicial mechanisms in addressing the issue, then the ICC will have no jurisdiction. But whereby it is clearly stated and obvious that the Nigerian authorities have refused or declined or unable or failed to investigate the matter, then ICC automatically assumes the jurisdiction. We are students of international law. We know the law. So nobody can say those things. People who are saying those things are crudely ignorant of the law. So our decision is well informed. And we took that decision to stop the killings, because as we speak now, the killings have continued. The destruction of, rendering of people's houses and forcing people into homelessness and so on and so forth have continued. Abductions, disappearances, torture, and what have you. They've all continued in Imo, and they have made Imo a killing field and a kind of Nigerian Somalia, if you like.
Emeka Umiagbalasi is leader of the International Society for Civil Liberties and Rule of Law, or InterSociety. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The main opposition in the Democratic Republic of Congo is calling for the compilation of a new voter list for the coming December elections. This after saying that the current list is not credible and will undermine the integrity and transparency of the polls. Martin Fayula, who leads the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party, the main group, came in second in the last election. He is expected to challenge incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi, who is seeking another term. But Fayulu tells me that his party will not participate in a fraudulent election that is tilted toward the ruling party.
The major concern is this, that voter register is not accurate. You have so many fake names over there. This guy of the Electoral Commission, they have given to people at home some machines to fabricate cards. And they have put many names there. And that voter register was not audited. And nobody knows exactly what is in there. I cannot agree to go to the poll with that register. That's why I'm asking the Electoral Commission to redo again the registration and to come with the list which should be audited by an independent organization.
Well, Mr. Fayulu, the question a lot of people will ask you is, where is the proof? Do you have evidence that the electoral register has been tampered with?
The main proof is this, that the Kadima and his team and Mr. Tshisekedi, they don't want that voter roll to be audited by an independent organization. This is the proof. And the other proof is this. We saw car accidents in two places here in Congo. And after the accident, we saw machine voting, registration machines. We saw cards and papers for the roll. And we saw them. And then the Electoral Commission said that they will go to the court and tell us what really happened. Until now, nobody knows what is the conclusion of those bad doing. The other thing is, we saw many people in Kinshasa and in the back country with cards. They have been fabricating the card in their house, and the people knows. And we have some organization, they have put it clearly that many people, many members of the Union Sacrée of Tshisekedi, they have given machines to the house to fabricate their own card. And it's well known here. That's why we continue to say no.
The Electoral Commission, the CNE, as you spoke about, said it hired 5 international experts in May to review the voter register, and they cleared it, saying it is reliable. Why do you disagree?
They are not experts. The expert has to have something that is known as expert, Mrs. Janet Love. She's from South Africa. She's Kadima's friend. The other guy, he works here in the hospital. He's in the computer department in one of the hospitals in the Kinshasa. Another guy from Malawi. But they have their organization registered somewhere that they have been acknowledged that they can give the go-ahead as an audit firm that the people can rely on. No, they don't. They don't have the ability, the capability to do so. This is a friend, 2, 3, 4, or 5 guys, as you said, and then they come to help the friend. No, nobody can agree with that.
Does that mean that your party and yourself will not go into the election if the electoral register is not audited or reviewed like you are demanding?
That means my organization will do the best to block that election. To ask for a reliable, credible, independent, election, not something prearranged. I'll do the best and to tell the people of Congo, nobody can agree that Mr. Kadima imposed what he wants.
Martin Fayulu leads the Engagement for Citizenship and Development Party. He spoke with me from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa. Lawmakers in Kenya have approved a 16% hike in the value-added tax or VAT on fuel. This, analysts say, will lead to an increase in the rising cost of living. Displeased with the approval, opposition lawmakers condemned it as punitive and will worsen the economic challenges facing ordinary citizens. It comes as President William Ruto's government is trying to find ways to raise additional revenue by about $365 million. Attorney James Mwamu is a former president of the Law Society of Kenya and a political analyst. He tells me that Kenyans are unhappy with the tax increase.
Kenyans are reacting to the news rather with a shock, because Kenyans thought that parliamentarians were at least going to take into account the rising cost of living, the impact that this particular increases of VAT on fuel levy is going to do to the rising cost of production, food, and other things. But it is with shock and consternation, because even right now, the government is not able to collect enough revenue because of the hard economic times that are facing Kenyans. And so many Kenyans are complaining and were hoping that Parliament was going to be the bulwark that was going to stop some of these deductions and taxations that are going to make their life even more difficult.
The leader of the opposition MPs in Parliament said the new tax was punitive, terming the decision to push ahead with the fuel clause as the saddest day in the history of Kenya. Is this how Kenyans are feeling at the moment?
Yeah, Kenyans are feeling betrayed. A lot of them think that the parliaments have gone into bed with the executive and we really don't have a strong opposition in parliament. Some of the arguments that are being advanced by members of parliament don't make sense. Like, you know, somebody saying that the housing levy for the first time is going to, you know, create a situation where Kenyans are going to get rid of the slums and things like that. But, you know, the issue of housing has been argued in other places is that an individual really should make a decision as to what type of house you want, and it should not be really rammed down your throat. There are suspicions that that money is meant for something else other than the making sure that people have cheaper houses. But The point is that even at the time when this thing is being imposed, people are already having difficulties. You know, banks are not collecting enough repayment on loans. You know, a lot of people's things are being sold. A retrenchment is going on in private sector because they can't pay. Many of our county governments are not able to meet their targets, are able to meet the overheads that they have, because there's no money coming from the national government. So, and then the other thing, of course, is that a lot of Kenyans who are being taxed are the same ones that are expected to contribute this amount of money.
There is also the issue of the government trying to raise about $356 million, a move that some people are saying is necessary in order to cushion the debt burden.
There's a counter-argument. The counter-argument is that loans are usually renegotiated or restructured so that ever if the loans are coming due and there is an opportunity for the government to go and discuss and restructure these loans, and some of them can be delayed. World Bank and the IMF are not dying tomorrow. The Chinese government is not folding tomorrow. So we're going to renegotiate these things for some kind of relief. It's not something that is beyond government.
So where do Kenyans go from here, the average taxpayer? Because some people are...
I think Kenyans, a lot of them will have to go to court and challenge some of these... challenge the finance bill and some of the things that they think were unfairly put into the law. You know, the courts sometimes have acted to stop some of these things in long run, because you see, if the court gives an order, it will then force both the executive and the parliament to go back to the drawing board and check some of those things that can actually affect Kenyans adversely. The most unfortunate thing is that the opposition in parliament is now looks very weak. They seem not to be keen on checking some of the excesses of the executive. And so I think our only hope maybe lies in going to court and perhaps getting orders of the court to deal with some of these things.
Attorney James Mwamu is a former president of the Law Society of Kenya and a political analyst. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Parliamentarians from the opposition are calling on the government to bring all of the Ugandan troops deployed abroad back home to help bolster security in the East African country. They said their deployment on peacekeeping missions abroad appears to have made it possible for militant groups to attack unarmed civilians. The lawmakers are also demanding an immediate audit of payments and equipment for the armed forces. The demand follows the recent killing of at least 40 students by the Allied Democratic Forces, a militant group based in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Parliamentarian Ibrahim Semuju tells me that the troops must return to protect the homeland.
We passed a budget of over 70 billion Ugandan shillings for our forces to pursue ADF in Congo. But ADF now, following that attack in Kasese, it appears it is operating in Uganda as well. So if you have an enemy at home and an enemy far away, so which enemy do you deal with first? So until we are sure that there is no ADF remaining in Uganda, then you can go to the Democratic Republic of Congo. And mind you, around 1998, 99, 2000, when we went to pursue ADF in Congo, we ended up in Kisangani, we ended up in the capital city, removing the government, and we ended up being accused. In fact, not accused, we lost the case in the international court. Last two financial years, we have been paying the Democratic Republic of Congo 200 billion shillings. So you never, nobody is sure that by going to Congo, actually, we are only pursuing ADF. That's why one is failed to return, because in the past, they have misbehaved. They went hunting for ADF. They ended up stealing gold from Congo.
Do you think the withdrawal of all these troops will boost internal security and prevent attacks by armed groups such as ADF Is that a fact that you can rely on? Do you have evidence that will support this assertion?
Because you see, the children who were hacked to death, shot, the ADF spent 2 hours to 3 hours killing and murdering our children. And then the army, the overall commander, Major General D.K. Orum, returned the following day from Congo, now to pursue ADF in Uganda. And part of the reason that we have been given from the local leaders there is that they don't have enough troops to man our borders. And that's why now we've been told some battalions are being sent there. So we need to protect ourselves against the ADF. You don't have to go to Congo, which is not our country. Why don't we just concentrate on buying equipment and using equipment to collect intelligence around the border and deploying along the border to stop them from entering Uganda?
But Mr. Semuju, Uganda has its international obligations. It's a member country in the East African Community. When called upon, it needs to provide assistance to help stabilize the entire region and not entirely solely on Uganda. Don't you think Uganda will be become, you know, like an island?
I have an obligation to my village and to the country, but I have a responsibility to feed my family. So I cannot leave my family starving and then say I have a responsibility to the village, so let me first take the food to the village and to the country. That's what we are saying. We're not saying that we are oblivious of that international obligation and regional, but we are under attack. We are under attack. Who do you defend first? Why don't we first concentrate on defending the Ugandans who are now vulnerable as a result of part of our forces going to Congo, going to Somalia, South Sudan, Central African Republic? You need to stabilize and provide security to Uganda. Then the excess is what you export.
Now, the opposition parliamentarians, including you, are calling on the government to institute a detailed audit and review into the payment and scale up on the supportive equipment supplied to all security personnel to improve their performance. What do you mean by this?
You see, this is our security, and government is accountable to the population. The amount of money that we spend, because every year we are told there will be classified equipment. Even the budget that we have just passed as parliament, there is almost $1 billion for classified equipment. We need to know these equipment that cannot defend us when we are under attack, which sort of equipment are they? Because in the past, we have had problems with the under declaration of strength. When we are fighting a road resistance army, a battalion that is supposed to comprise of 700 soldiers ended up being 300. So our own soldiers have in the past exaggerated our strength. We cannot entirely leave our own security and security of Ugandans in their hands. That's why we must keep watching. We are the institution that appropriates money for them. So they must account for the strength, but also for the equipment that we keep buying.
Ibrahim Semuju is a Ugandan member of parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from my collection of music from the continent. But first, a
A former Zambian top envoy to South Africa has petitioned authorities saying he was abducted and assaulted by police officers who detained him. Emmanuel Mwamba, Zambia's former High Commissioner to South Africa and later to Ethiopia, says the mistreatment is a gross violation of his rights. He has since petitioned the Human Rights Commission. He says it appears the administration is using state institutions, including the police, to intimidate and harass opponents, accusations the government sharply denies. Mwamba, who is also a spokesman for the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, was arrested by 12 police officers. This after he was charged with forgery and publication of information, a violation of the Cybersecurity and Cyber Crimes Act. Mwamba and another person have since been released pending a court appearance. For more reaction about his arrest and subsequent petition to the authorities, I reach Ambassador Emmanuel Mwamba in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
I didn't know that the police were looking for me. They just stormed the place where I was washing the car, a public place. And I demanded that I speak to my lawyer because I didn't know where these 12 men were from. I couldn't just allow 12 men to take me. I demanded to know who they were. They didn't show me any ID. Consequently, they injured my right thumb, my wrist, right wrist, my shoulder was, I think, almost dislocated on my right. I'm still in pain. A lot of pain on my right neck and the bruises on the left shoulder, which you probably must have seen. After I was detained for a period of 3 days, so after I was released, I went to the hospital, which confirmed the injuries that I had, and they issued a medical report. The brutal attack on me, whether it was by policemen or strange men, cannot be allowed in a democracy.
So what has the police authority said so far about the allegations you are making against these officers?
They claim that they didn't receive my medical report. I proceeded to take the original copies of my medical report issued by the University Teaching Hospital, a government facility. And I took the records, again, the medical reports, on Monday. Today is Friday. Nothing has been done. No police officer has been arrested or charged for the offense of assault. Instead, they turned around and charged me for assault that had assaulted one of the policemen when they were arresting me.
But did you assault? Did you engage in any altercation with the police officers who came to arrest you?
No, not at all. There were many witnesses, and some have even spoken to them after that. There were even some that were taking video calls, which the police went into the crowd and grabbed those phones. I have spoken to the people whose phones were grabbed, and they are willing to give testimony, you know, to the courts to demonstrate what I am telling you and what the medical records are showing. Did I resist? No, Peter. I am a distinguished diplomat in this country. I have a public life for the last 25 years. I'm a renowned, you know, I used to be official spokesperson for the second president. I've served at the highest level in government as permanent secretary. There was no way I would interfere with the work of the police. But you should just see 12 people turn up in 3 motor vehicles and they approach me and they're asking me to go with you. My only crime is that I asked that I call my lawyer and I call my wife. That was the only crime. And they were preventing me from calling my lawyer or my wife. I was in great danger because I didn't know who these men were. And this was literally an abduction. If they wanted me for any matter, Peter, they have my numbers. I am a man of fixed abode. I'm a man who's renowned in this country. I was never on the run. In fact, when they came to the car wash, I had just come from a radio program where we are discussing party matters. As you know, I'm one of the official spokespersons for the opposition Patriotic Front. So I was on radio. There was no need to look for me like a dangerous criminal where you send all these men who ended up brutalizing me.
Some people are saying that the said document you are alleged to have forged was meant to create tension, disaffection, and make the government unpopular, pretty much trying to undermine the societal norms and the peace that Zambia enjoys.
That is, Peter, that's ridiculous. The president was on record ridiculing the church. His secretary general called the foremost archbishop in Zambia for the Catholic Church, he called him a Lucifer and referred him to those that promote genocide in Africa. Who is promoting lawlessness in our country? I was not part to that debate. It has been the government trying to destroy the voice of the church. It is government that has raised, you know, the risk nature to our peace and security with those remarks and with the unwanted, unwarranted attacks against the church. This is before even the documents emerge. The President Dakayi Ndayishimiye himself sent 7 ministers to speak to the authorities of the Catholic Church, recognizing that they had made mistakes and they were what they called a peace mission. Why were they seeking a peace mission with the Catholic if they didn't offend the Catholic? How do I come in?
Ambassador Emmanuel Mwamba is a former Zambian top envoy to South Africa. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. That's the difference when you're my baby. That's how it is when you're me stop the world. Feel my tough fashion. Be what you ask for. So tell me if you want action. Until the lights back on. I got the one we could last long. And I never knew my son. Feel like what I waited for night long. I pull up in my fashion. Every night flashing anyway. Can go ahead and just sit out and chill up in my villa to get out the whole night. Just get in the drop top, take the head out and cruise with your head outside. Go, go ahead, it's your time, baby. It's your time, baby. Get my baby. That's the difference when you're my baby. That's how it is when you're. Nobody make me stop the world. When you're my baby, that's how it is when you're.
Beautiful ladies who wanna link up. Make on a semi location. Me and my homies having a drink car. Aqua safari with a vacation. Five star life. Jet skis moving like dolphins. And you know we got ice on ice. Big boys know they like talking. What else?
I can't let you go. Cause I had a craze for your body. And the energy.
Just met, mami Tawasen, please let me take you out if it's alright. I need a lady by my side, and I can look at it further cause she my type. You know I saw you coming, and I could see that I don't really know this girl, but she's a vibe. And now you're looking all surprised, I'm sorry, I apologize cause I can't help it. I got a crush on you, I'm kinda selfish, you think it's a lie, don't you? My coma melting, cause I can die for you, you know I felt it, that I'd be the one for you. Would you wanna walk with me? A couple things that we can talk about. Baby, please talk to me. Tell me what you need and I can sort it out. You know I got you.
I can't let you go, cause I had a craze for your body. And the energy, oh, make it give me what I did. Baby, why you do me so? Oh, yeah. Girl, your body tonight. I go buff champagne for your body tonight. Spend all my money, oh. If you got a friend or two with a body, oh. Baby, pull up, let's get busy tonight. Your body, oh. Come on, me need my mommy, oh. So baby, come do my quick pop champagne. I say your body make her go insane.
Something. the man come. Nangoti XYZ, Rudova Diri Uri wanna panajet. Anajigona eganga uye bet. Datenga karenda niri kusimbisa madet. Asikana japera, japera. Usafaite chingo jinetera. Eko katika chakuda kufixa. Wawasiana na ya murudo kaneka kuzinyepera. Chanjera kuzuviringira life yako. Nekuda kupo wa ma ex. Unenge uchapera mari. Nema banduru uchida kupo wa ma ex. Shanda my feelings. Tiripa maticha eru dotopa matichings. Charamba nisa vanu kanyaye kechiting. Rudo noda kukuchitzir wase mota mukichen. Vachata zekuro vana tubo kisen. Zobaya moyo wangu inijuja kisen. Murudo hamudi uke puten. Siyaji ke puteni. Unogo na kuita stress oita sedi munu. Ota kutijinzi ex ndia beti munu. Wavakushamba zasa mai itira na muchata nana muchizire koda muma bedroom. Sakai wewe, why did you block my number? Ndakaeza kuzifonera tichiramba. Ndaijiziva tichatamba. Songa 7 number zangu kutiplamba. Weta mpunza XY ulizi. Why, why? Kana kumbanditi woyesi naichi. Why, why? Hongu taka tukana, tukana. Why? Dogu bata bukana, bukana. Why? Gati zive itika wana mukana. Chisinga pere mupenyu wapana. Chingo mutiwo alise. Wako, andina kutombo kuvenga iwe chako. Kudara takaita ma fight, but ava right inda kango kurambira unu wako. Asichim na ex, ako kuzongo tizi YX. Ndaka pensa sera kukunyore razi puku. Ukasa reply, did you see my text? Uri say utano, ari say my wex. Chinonzi chino kangano ide moere ex. Let's just be friends, the opposite sex. Famishu no laughter, let's try it first. Chonjera kuzuviringira life yako nekuda kupowa ma ex. Unenge uchapera mari nema banduru uchida kupowa ma ex. Ita move on move on kunza wai. Kuramba urizindi icho chikai. Ita move on move on kunza wai. Shekufinura na shinozo tipe inai. Eta ufunza XY urizi. Why? Why? Kana kumbanditi wa yesi naichi. Why? Why? Hongo taka tukana.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Michael Hove, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, in a village where the lion is a barber, the goat keeps an afro. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.